Of the Hornets, go.
In everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play so far.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can play against. It makes us air split. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide, guys. This is Dave. Again, I'm riding solo. And like I said in the last episode, we're gonna spin through a couple of shows tonight and release these over a couple of days. So you're stuck with me through these. Hopefully you'll still stick around and give us some good questions and feedback and such. But in this second in this mini blast of episodes, I want to spend some time talking about, and again, we're kind of looking back because we haven't done a show in a while. And, we like to share our opinions. You guys like to hear our opinions. And so I thought, well, you know, even though this is a little bit dated, there's still some relevance. And you guys probably have some thoughts and opinions and want to hear ours. So we're going to spend just a little bit of time. This will be a lot shorter than the last one, but want to spend some time talking about coaching changes. This staff, this football staff really turned over this offseason, and just the number of high profile names that are in and out of the coaching staff is pretty darn incredible. And then the NCAA added a new coaching position. And we're using that at Alabama. Saban specifically is assigning that to quarterback, which I think is a really smart, you know, you think about the NFL model, quarterback coaches is pretty much the norm. And we have been using almost by default, the offensive coordinator as the quarterback coach. And so I think when you can let those be two different people, then they can focus deeper. Because that's not really a lumped group. If you want to say someone's going to coach defensive tackles and defensive ends, and so you have a defensive line coach, that makes a lot of sense. If you want to have a linebacker coach that's going to coach in and out, okay, that makes sense. But the disparity between quarterback and offensive coordinator, I think, is significant enough. You wouldn't have, well, you know, I guess defensive coordinators coach individual positions, but the quarterback position, I don't know. They're all different. They're strange. Relative to other players. And so I think that's a great ad for us to do that. I don't know why I went down that path, but I did. At any rate, let's step through the coaching changes. It was a really, really good article on this. And I posted it on the Facebook, back in February. And so go look for that. It was a darn good article where it broke down all of the coaches and offered some stuff on there. I think my mental approach to this is pretty close to what's in the article. At any rate, I'll run through here. So I'm going to start on offense, and the offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll, you know, when I first heard that he was leaving, I was really disappointed because I thought we only had just scratched the surface of what he could do as an offensive coordinator. And I still believe that. I still really believe that. But he's going to go to the Bills and probably have some great success there. If we had just lost one, it was the staff overhaul that sort of balances it out, overall. And I'm okay losing, with Brian moving on. I really liked him. I thought he brought a lot. But I think he may be missed. But like I said, I think the net is a significant gain. What we did with Daboll leaving is we moved Mike Locksley over from the wide receiver coach. Now, Mike Locksley is not your normal wide receivers coach. He was at one time the head coach at Maryland. He was the offensive coordinator at Maryland. He has significant experience in college football. He's more of a college football lifer as opposed to Daboll has been more of a pro lifer. And so you kind of expected that he would get back to that. And so Locksley isn't just your Joe wide receiver coach moving over to OC. He's been around the world of college football. And I think Now, if you had asked me the question, was he the best offensive coordinator we could have hired? I think there's a couple ways to answer that question. One way is no, he was not the best option. I kind of liked, in terms of, if you're just picking out names, I kind of liked Chip Long, the Notre Dame offensive coordinator. I think he probably got a long look at the position. You know, there was some talk about Hugh Freeze. I don't know that he would have been brought in as offensive coordinator, more probably an analyst, but certainly that would have been an intriguing hire. I think Locksley, I think he was a good hire for stability within the program. I think Saban knew that he was going to do some overhaul, that there was going to be some overhaul, and he needed pillars of stability. And at the two coordinator positions, even though they're new names in the position, they're familiar faces. And so moving Locksley into OC, I think was for stability. And then Locksley is a really good recruiter. The players really like him. And so I think there's some stability and some recruiting in keeping him around. And I think it was the right decision. I think it was a good decision. I think it was the right decision. Had the rest of the staff, had there not been the turnover across the rest of the staff, I don't know that we would have gone Locksley. And I'm just being candid, and that's just my opinion. I think we probably would have gone Chip Long. You know, that's just my two cents. I'm pleased with Locksley. I think we're going to do very well with him. The quarterback's coach, again, you know, historically, that's been the OC, and so that was Brian Daboll. Again, you know, we brought in Dan Enos, who's a former Arkansas offensive coordinator, to fill that position. And one of the things that I like that Saban does is he almost has – and you think back, you know, when we had Sark and we had Kiffin and we've had, you know, a number of other coaches over the years, including Locksley himself, who came in as an analyst. And we've had others do things similar to that, where we've almost always had two experienced offensive coordinators on the staff or around the staff. It could be in an analyst position. And I think that's always sort of a smart, clever move. When we brought in Sark as an analyst, I thought that was genius in the moment, and I still think it was. It didn't pan out as well as we all would have liked, but I thought it was a clever move to bring him in that time. And I think here, you know, when we brought in Locksley as an analyst, and he sort of promoted to an on-field position, and he was a second offensive coordinator, I like the stability that gives you within the program. I like the options that gives you within a program. And so I like bringing in Dan Enos, who's a former, like I said, Arkansas offensive coordinator. I like the fact that almost like we have a offensive coordinator in waiting, or we have a backup plan at the offensive coordinator were we to need it. And so Locksley was an example of needing it this year to maintain the stability. So I kind of like that as a tactic. And again, he's in the quarterback coach position, which is a new 10th coach on the field coach for 2018. Again, I like his experience as an OC. And then I just like him as a new tool, a new weapon. I think the quarterback room will benefit by that. Wide receivers, you know, Locksley's still on the staff, but he's moved on from wide receiver coach. I like Josh Gattis, who we brought in from Penn State, also with Vanderbilt. So he's been with James Franklin a little bit. You know, one of the things I really, in sort of looking at him and his success is he took Jordan Matthews, who was a two-star recruit out of high school, and he ended up having three of the top receiving seasons in the history of Vanderbilt's program. That's pretty darn impressive. He was drafted well into the NFL and really stood out for a couple of years. I think he's battled through some injuries of lately, but that really speaks to Josh being a player developer. You can take a two-star and develop him into an all-conference type player in the SEC. That's pretty darn impressive. So I like him coming in with the youth at receiver that we have, giving them a sort of a new voice, a level of energy, helping develop and refine their talent. And he is highly regarded as a recruiter. And we're going to see that as a theme in this young coaching staff. But Josh Gattis at wide receiver coach, watch out for him. I think he's going to do really good things at that position. Running backs coach, this is probably the, you know, maybe one of the bigger losses. Burton Burns is stepping down, and he's taking more of an administrative role. And I get ribbed for my pronunciation sometimes, but Joe Panunzio is taking over, and he was a former tight ends coach, and he's been around. I think he's coached some special teams. He's coached tight ends. He's been around for quite a while. And so he's flipping over to coach the running backs. You know, I have nothing against Joe. He's not a step up at the position like I think some of the other hires are. But you could almost not hire anyone that would be a step up from Burton Burns. I think he was a 30-year, you know, coach at the position. Been around the block. Been with Saban for a long time. Very high standard of excellence from Burton. And just a high caliber individual and a high caliber coach. And so, not that I think differently, about Joe, but you know, those are two different cats, and, Burton certainly, I think, will be missed, but he's still going to be around. And I want to touch on that for a minute, but you know, when we talk about Joe, I think he helps anchor some stability within the offense because it's a, you know, familiar face that's around, and he's got some recruiting chops too. I can't list some of the players that he's sort of been attributed, but it's an impressive list. And so he has some recruiting chops there as well. And Burton Burns, he's got a new role. So he's not going anywhere. He's just not going to be an on the field coach. He is taking a new role within the football offices, and he's still going to be around. He's still going to be around in staff meetings. He's still going to be the opportunity to be around in practices. He can coach up Joe a little bit, which might be good. But I tell you, one of the things I really like about what Burton Burns is doing is he is taking up things within the athletic office that will free up Coach Saban. It will take demands for Coach Saban's time away from, you know, a lot of player touch points, academics, development, nutrition. Not that Saban's going to be standoffish with the players, but a lot of those touch points, a lot of those tasks and topics that maybe Saban had a hand in, he's got a trusted person in Burton Burns to take those over. And I think that's energizing. That can be energizing for Coach Saban. And again, that's sort of a theme in this coaching staff: youth, energizing, and recruiting. And those are sort of hand in glove type things. I think we see that in some of the shifts with the younger coaches on both sides of the ball, with Burton Burns taking a role off the field to take over some of these items. And actually, Joe Pendry, if you remember that name, he was the offensive line coach under Saban, one of Saban's first hires. And Pendry's been around the football offices doing a myriad of things. And he is stepping down, retiring officially sort of out of the building. And I think Burton's going to take over some of those responsibilities and some of the other stuff that Saban maybe has had a hand in. So I think that's going to be beneficial sort of across the board. Flip the field to defense. Jeremy Pruitt is out. He's now the head coach at Tennessee. And I tell you, I knew that Jeremy would have an opportunity to be a defensive coordinator. I thought he was a year away. And that's really how I viewed it. Kirby Smart, it looked like any time he could go. And I thought, you know, Pruitt's on that cycle, but he's a year away. And the reality is, Tennessee snagged him. But, you know, he was at Alabama. He went to Florida State, was there, had tremendous success, went to Georgia, was there, had tremendous success, then back at Alabama and again had, you know, tremendous success. So being able to do that across multiple programs. Now, he ruffled some feathers around the way, along the way, but, you know, that's going to happen. And he's parlayed that into head coaching job at Tennessee. I as much as I enjoyed the debacle that was the Tennessee, head coaching search, when they tabbed Pruitt, I thought, oh, that I don't like that. They may have just got it right after getting it so wrong. I think, and look, I wish we had recorded this back in the spring, because I've only seen it one. I've only seen this written or speculated in one place, and it was just in the last week. So I wish I could have been about, you know, 4 months ahead on this. But I think if Pruitt goes in and does an admirable job at turning around Tennessee, that he might be the coach to replace Saban. And I told my wife, you know, about 2 months ago, I said, honey, you've heard it here first. I think he has a chance to replace Saban. And so there you go. But anyways, he's out. So we won't talk about him any more than we just did. And we brought in Tosh Lupui. And so Tosh has been around. And so, again, you get that stability factor. He's, you know, he's a familiar face with a new job title and a new position. And, you know, speculation or sort of commentary is that he's one of the best recruiters in college football. So this is another one, not unlike Loxley, where I thought Saban might have felt a little bit of pressure to make the move, make sort of the next progressive move, you know, move Loxley into OC and move Tosh over, you know, into defensive coordinator. And that had he not done that, had he brought in external OC and DC, not only would there have been, you know, some difference in stability, but you may have lost those coaches. They may have left. They may have said, I don't have an opportunity here. And for as much as coach says, you know, everyone has an opportunity, if he had demonstrated to these coaches that maybe they really didn't, then you might not keep them both. You might keep one. I don't know that you keep both. And so to move them both into the coordinator positions, and that's not to say they can't handle it. It only is to say that I don't know that they would have been the first choice if everything else were equal. If you knew that they would stay, I don't know that they would have been hired into that position. That's just my opinion. Doesn't mean they're not going to do well. That's just my two cents on the situation. So I think Tosh, he's, you know, and I've read a number of articles about him having to learn the secondary and learn. And so he's done very well at coaching linebackers. It's sort of the focus on that outside linebackers, defensive ends. That's sort of where he's made his reputation, and certainly reputation in recruiting as well, to think holistically on the defense. That's going to be brand new to him. It's the first time he's ever done that. And so we'll have a little bit of a learning curve there. But, you know, we've got Saban will help out, and we'll get to the next guy that I think is going to help out there as well. I look for good things from Tosh. But, you know, again, this is a big step for him. I'll say that. But he's one of the best recruiters, I think, in college football. A lot of energy, a lot of excitement, and I think he can grow into the position, and I really do feel that. Linebackers, you know, Jeremy Pruitt was the defensive coordinator, but he coached linebackers as well. And so we brought in Pete Golding from University of Texas, San Antonio. He was their defensive coordinator, and he was hired even before last season ended. And he was hired, and it was in a sort of a nondescript position. He's going to be on the staff. We don't know what his title is going to be. And to me, this is sort of the yin and yang of the Tosh decision. I think, you know, we knew that Jeremy Pruitt was out, so we knew that there was an opening, and we knew that there was an opening at the defensive coordinator position. And so I think Pete Golding was brought in to either be the defensive coordinator or to support the defensive coordinator. And so that's going to be interesting how that plays out over the next couple of years. But I think Pete Golding is a sensational hire. I think that's an example of Saban doing his homework in the hiring process. And so I think sort of the combination of Tosh and Pete and Saban, they're going to make sure the defense is right, and they're going to make sure that Tosh is coached up into the position. And again, there's a fallback, much like Dan Enos is almost a second offensive coordinator. You know, Pete Golding is almost, you know, a second defensive coordinator. And again, his reputation, he brings youth, outstanding reputation as a teacher, as well as a recruiter. So I think that's a fantastic hire. Defensive line, Carl Dunbar has moved on. He went to the Steelers, and we were able to bring in Craig Kuligowski. Coach Cool is the players call him. I think this is one of the best hires up and down the list. I think this is one of the best hires you know, Coach Cool was the defensive line coach at Missouri when they first entered the program. And I think the first 2 years they were when they first entered the conference, I think their first couple of years, they had some runs at the SEC championship game. And they were sort of built on their defense and especially their defensive front. They had a number of guys that performed well and were drafted well. Coach Cool was the defensive line coach. And when Mark Richt left Georgia or was asked to leave Georgia, whatever that story was, when he started at Miami, the very first coach that he hired on his staff was Coach Kuligowski. And in fact, he hired him. he hired Coach Cool before he hired his defensive coordinator. And he was asked about that. And Richt said, I don't know if you don't want Coach Cool on coaching your line, then I don't know if I want you to be my defensive coordinator. And it's sort of the mentality that he had. He had that high of a level of respect for Kuligowski. And so the fact that we were able to lure him in is phenomenal. He is one of the best talent evaluators and teachers in college football, especially along the defensive front. And there's been a number of articles over the last couple of weeks where they've talked about the attention that he gives to all of the players, not just the stars, but to the walk-ons as well. And that really speaks to his love and passion for teaching, that he's not just going to spend the time with the starters and maybe the second team, but he's spending time with the walk-ons that may not play, may not see any time. And but he's gonna invest the energy and the effort because, you know, he wants everyone to get it right. He wants everyone to improve. And so that's just the heart of a teacher there. And I think that's gonna be fun to see the defensive front develop. And we'll talk about defense for the season. But excited about Coach Cool being on the staff. Defensive backs. Derek Ansley left for the Raiders, and we bring in Carl Scott from Texas Tech. I think that's probably a push. I liked Ansley, but I read good things and hear good things about Carl Scott. You know, a young, bright, energetic coach. Again, that's sort of a theme. And I think he's going to be an asset in recruiting. So that'll certainly be good to see. And then the last coach that we'll talk about here is special teams and tight ends. Joe Pannunzio has moved over from that position. So, again, familiar face and a new job title. He's moved over to the running back coach, and we've brought in Jeff Banks from Texas A&M. Now, I'll tell you this. I'll tell you a story. I have a good buddy of mine, and I've probably mentioned him in some form or fashion, but I have a good buddy of mine that I worked with years ago that is a Texas A&M graduate, and he's, you know, he's Gig'em and all that stuff. And he knows people that are connected in the program. I don't think that he necessarily is, but he knows people. He's close to people that are. And he emailed me about 3 days before Jeff Banks was hired. And he said, I am hearing from my sources that you guys are about to hire Jeff Banks. And let me tell you what you're going to get when you get this guy. And I was like, well, that's kind of interesting. And then he went on to say, you know, just really good things about him. Now he had some issues there at Texas A&M, and I won't get into all that. That's probably, you could probably look it up, but, you know, he had an incredible reputation at Texas A&M as a recruiter, elite recruiter, is some of the terminology used, and that he was especially good at coaching special teams. And I tell you, if Alabama needs some help somewhere, I think it's coaching special teams. And I think we'll do some good things at the with the tight ends as well. But I think having someone that can help us in the special teams, I think we're going to get a lot of value out of that. So I'm excited about Jeff Banks based on some of the things that I've heard, and look forward to seeing some improvement on the special teams. So that's what we got here in terms of you know what? I did write down one more thing I wanted to spend time with. I got so excited, and I am still excited. When I think about the new coaches, you know, Loxley, Enos, Gaddis, Tosh, Golding, Carl Scott, Kuligowski, and Jeff Banks, I started, and this is a little bit hyperbole, I get it, but I said, you know, this kind of reminds me, and I went back and looked at the staff that Coach Saban had at LSU when they won the national title. So 2000, what year is that? 2003. I can't read my own writing. And he had on that staff, Kirby Smart, Jimbo Fisher, Will Muschamp, Derek Dooley, Lance Thompson, Stacy Searles, all that are still coaching today. And you could individually pick some of those guys out and say, I'm not sure I like them all, but they all still get paid to coach college football, which is a pretty darn good deal. That's an impressive staff. And when I think about, you know, and like I said, we don't know how these people are going to turn out. We didn't know how those guys were going to turn out. But I'm excited about, you know, that staff at LSU in 2003 was young, energetic, hard workers, go-getters, and recruiters, and all of the things, teachers, all of the things that I hear about, you know, the youth really that's been sort of injected into this coaching staff. And then that made me think of, you know, talk about coaching staffs with some legs on them. And again, I can't read my writing. It's either the 94 or 95 Browns. And so this is NFL. But get this, man. Bill Belichick, Coach Saban, the late Pat Hill, Kirk Ferentz, Eric Mangini. And then off the field, you had in varying capacities, Ozzie Newsome, Scott Pioli, Thomas Dimitrioff, and Mike Tannenbaum. And you think, and then Jim Schwartz in there for good measure. He was an on-the-field coach. And you think, damn, that's a pretty impressive group of folks. So it's a little hyperbole to say that, you know, this year, 2018 Alabama football coaching staff is going to rival either of those groups. But I wouldn't rule it out either. I'm really excited about some of the guys on the staff. So I thought it was a fun thing to kind of share. Again, hit us up. You know, this is a topic that I wish we had gotten to cover in sort of more real time, but it's a fun topic to step through. And it's going to be exciting as we think about the 2018 season. It's going to be exciting to see how the staff comes together and how some of these folks as individuals, you know, perform. We're going to watch that, enjoy watching that as much as we enjoy watching some of the players. If you have any questions or comments, or you want to poke at this a little bit, or just, you know, ask us about anything, you know, reach out. We're on email at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com or on Facebook at Alabama Football Podcast. You know, leave us an email, drop us something on Facebook, like give us a like. And if you would go to iTunes, this is really important, right? Because it helps our ratings, helps our rankings. Go leave us a review. Give us, you know, maybe a 5-star. I don't know. Give us an authentic review and leave us a comment. And if you have a question in the comment, you know, give us a comment there and we'll be happy to respond to those as well. In the meantime, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for listening and roll tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the tide. Got that, coach? Of course, roll tide.